Good morning, everyone. Let me go ahead and call the Mesa City Council study session of Thursday, April 17th to order. We have 10 items. The first is to review the items on the April 21st regular council meeting. We want to go over to the packet. We'll go through those. The clips aren't working on my notebook. I hope they make three more meetings.
But who's counting, right?
Yeah. Okay, page one. Any election stuff?
Councilmember Whalen, I believe, is out of town, but Councilmember Summers is on his way.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and excuse Councilmember Whalen. And we'll get on Councilmember Summers when he comes in late.
Probably at work.
Oh, at work. That's work then. All right, page two. I did have a question. We used to get more detail on some of these liquor license applications, but how do you have an auto spa on number 3C? Is that a new name for a convenience market now? The auto gets... Okay, I thought maybe they would detail it or something when you were in buying goods, but that's just the name. It just came up with auto spa.
We could try to find out more information for you, Mayor, if you'd like, before Monday.
No, I guess it's all right. I just thought it was a little deviation from what I'm used to seeing on these things.
We already have some in Mesa, some of these.
That are called auto spas?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I'll get around more.
Don't go.
Okay. All right. No. Let's keep going on to 3F. Building permits have not been issued, correct?
That's correct.
And 3G, the C of O, has not been issued?
Well, the Fraternal Order of Eagles, actually their location is within 100 feet of a church, and so they need to withdraw before Monday. And our understanding is that they got with their board and they will withdraw before Monday.
Okay. All right, let's take that off then. Our policy then, again, on the building permits on 3F, didn't we agree that we could do liquor licenses before the building permit so they knew that there was one that would be available to them when they built and were open?
My understanding is that there, if there is an existing building, that they will need to get their permits before we will give them their approval for a liquor license.
Okay.
If it's a new construction, mm-hmm. that they will not need to have those building permits.
All right. Tom?
I'm not sure that we mean to say that they won't need to. It's that on certain circumstances, if it's a very large building and big capital investment, we have the discretion not to require it ahead of time.
If it's brand new construction.
Right, brand new construction, right.
And that's, that was the conversation with that.
Right.
Vice Mayor?
Jenny, you know, one of the interesting things, I'm looking at the address on this this Fraternal Order of Eagles. And one of the interesting things that's happened is that with the advent of charter schools, schools pop up everywhere. And when the liquor license laws for the state were passed, I think they anticipated neighborhood schools and, you know, schools that were, you know, spaced at locations around the community that were probably not quite what we're seeing now, which is we're seeing them go up in retail strip centers. Everything else. Has there been any discussion at all, and really probably I should be looking at Scott Butler on this one, but any discussion at all of revisiting this particular provision, because it really makes things challenging. As you know, we've had problems in downtown Mesa because we have so many churches and schools, and one of the things that we had tried to do a couple of years ago was ask for a different rule in a town center area. Mm-hmm. So what's happening?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, that's a good question. We continue to look at that. It's a very politically sensitive issue, of course, and we've tried to make the case, along with some of our other cities, that a central business district may have some unique needs, as we do in downtown Mesa, where we do have charter schools in close proximity to our major thoroughfare where restaurants and other things would want to locate. So we continue to have that dialogue. Obviously, there's nothing coming up this session for that, but we hope in the future, because we keep hearing those requests from merchants and other folks downtown that that's something they'd like to see.
Well, and this myth persists in Mesa that, that the reason that people can't get a liquor license is because, well, settled by Mormons, and, you know, so they don't let people have liquor licenses. They don't understand it's state law that has to do with the distance between churches and schools and any kind of a liquor license.
Vice Mayor Walters, I should note that there was a restaurant at this location previously, and if this was a restaurant, we would approve the liquor license.
So it would
but
be
this
okay
is
with
for
that?
A club license,
okay,
which has different restrictions.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
Any other questions on page 3? Page 4? On 5D, it has to do with the roll-off container systems. I assume that this is the commercial trash collection aspect. And my question had to do with matching when they, there were some state changes and the competition was brought in, and we now compete against private haulers. And I have, I'm not sure if anybody's seen an update on, you know, our rates versus other rates and the profitability of doing commercial hauling. Phoenix does different contracts, even I think for some of the residential where they bid against private haulers. And every year or two I get a private hauler that wants to know whether we've done any analysis or going to go out to bid or... Can you give me a little update on the privatization of the commercial aspect of, and if this is what these units are going to be used for?
Yes, Mayor and Council. We look at it on a monthly basis as well as an annual basis. Our goal is to return a contribution back to the general fund of 10%. And I can report for 06-07 on the roll-off side, we returned 18% back to the general fund. And on the front load side, we had 6.5% that we returned back. As far as our rates goes compared to the private companies, what usually happens is as we raise our rates, they raise their rates. So like I said, we watch it on a monthly basis as well as an annual basis to make sure that we're still providing the service at a cost-effective, in a cost-effective manner, and we're profitable in doing it.
Willie, is that in the presentation that you gave when you did your budget review?
Yes.
Do we have that? Mayor, I think we can provide that information again, but I think we covered that. It's just that you were one of the first ones, I think, that made the presentation, but that annual review, we do the comparison of resident, do that benchmarking against the Phoenix commercial haulers.
Against the Phoenix residential.
Residential haulers, and then you're looking at the commercial. You're just making it available, and then someone can sign up to go with you.
Correct. They have a choice. They have a choice, and currently we service over 40% of the market on commercial.
So the three replacement heavy-duty chassis at $863, a chunk of money, you've got that into your program, and you recover that as you're driving around picking these things up. All right, that was my question.
Okay.
Thank you. That's page 4. Page 5. 5H we'll talk about under the study session item number 2, so we'll hit it in a little more detail. I believe I have conflicts then on 5, what, I, J, K, L, M, N. All right.
That's it.
All of those have, in some degree or another, some asphalt construction work involved in them, so I still have a ownership interest in some land that leases to asphalt companies. Yes.
5M. The only thing that I wanted to just maybe have you prepared to talk about that evening, if we're going to talk about it, or maybe we talk about it today, is, you know, it goes through that intersection that we're already designing a widening project on at Lindsay and McKellips. So I'm sure the left hand and the right hand are talking to each other on this.
We are.
Okay.
You want to come up, Lenny, too?
Because we've got a design project to widen that same intersection.
It's McKellips from Gilbert. to Val Vista.
Mayor Hawker, Vice, or Councilmember Pruitt, yes, in fact we have. We actually held back in those intersections. We know where the RTP projects are scheduled to go.
We've done that.
And we backed off all those intersections all the way around.
I assumed that was the case. I just wanted to make sure.
That's great.
Question on some of those, Mayor. So I guess I'll ask the question since you have the conflict, but on item 5M, that's Nesbitt. Item 5N is Nesbitt. I think, and Councilmember Whalen isn't here to ask this, but I think he has a conflict.
We were, yes. We raised that.
Yes.
We were involved with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how are we coming with our paving the city, painting the city black, Chris? This is a good time to ask the question.
Actually, there's a lot of paint going downtown
yes,
this
that's
last
right.
week.
We have a few little slides we'd like to share with you if you have a few minutes, or we can bring them back another time.
Well, we're going to do a streets presentation next Thursday.
Next Thursday?
So would that be, I think that would be a good time to just update everybody on that.
Yeah. Just to answer you real quick, this is the biggest season of overlays we've ever done in City Mesa's history. And you'll see more coming. So.
Good. We like seeing the streets get fixed. Thank you very much. This is as a result of the dedicated sales tax that the voters passed in 2006.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay. So that would put us over on page 8. Any questions on page 8? Page 9? Into introductions. I think I need to do, I have not read the detail and backup work on 6A, but it is an interesting write-up that this request will allow for the correct residential density for an existing multi-residential complex. Is it annexed or snuck through somehow and we labeled it wrong?
Mayor, right now it is four fourplexes that are on two parcels, and they've been purchased by a new owner who's now dividing them up into four separate lots. And it's just kind of the way the densities and the math works out in this case. As a whole, they meet the density requirements, but when you divide them up into four individual properties, they didn't quite meet the density requirements, therefore requiring the zoning with the smaller lots to make the density work with the zoning.
Okay. All right, it's page 9, page 10. Tom.
I would ask that item 6H be taken off the consent agenda. I think that's a horrible idea at this time. And I would also ask that the council report dated April 21st that says that council members requested that staff prepare this be amended to reflect that some council members asked that this be brought forward, not all of them.
Vice Mayor.
Yes, I did ask for this to be brought forward. We brought a letter to the mayor with three signatures on it. This is an introduction of this. This is not final passage, that's fine. I'm going to explain it, though, because people watching don't know what this is. The city council members get a monthly car allowance to pay for gasoline and the use of our own vehicles. We don't have a city vehicle. We get reimbursement. We instituted this in 2001. It has not changed since 2001. And as some of you may be aware, gas prices have changed over that period of time somewhat, as in they have more than doubled. This is largely not going to benefit anybody who is sitting here. We have continued year in and year out to have more and more of it eating out of our own paychecks. And quite frankly, the paycheck isn't that large. We make $19,000 a year basically for being a council member, which is about 30 to 50 hours a week depending on what you're doing. And if you're doing this job well, you're out all over the community, and it does take a lot of gasoline. Not only that, you're in meetings in Phoenix, you're in meetings in neighboring communities, and I do not think that it is fair to continue to ask council members to go into their own pockets to pay for the additional amount of money for the gasoline. So yes, I did request it. I don't think there's ever a good time. It is not something that for the most part will even benefit, as I said, the people who are sitting up here. It will help the incoming council members. We aren't looking at raising the salary. What we are doing is looking at reimbursing the actual costs that people incur. So I'm fine with somebody voting no on it, but I want everybody to understand what it is and why it's coming forward.
And this is a process that we've established to put items on the agenda. I can put an item on the agenda, the city manager can, or three council members can sign a letter saying we want this item on for discussion, and that's the process this one actually went through. Okay. Under the 6D, if we move forward to this, then that would be for which election does that go on?
Is
that
November.
November election? Okay. All right. And 6E, F, and G, we're going to have a presentation on under study session on item number 3. All right. The introduction of the town center assessments, 7A. Do we have conflicts on introducing that? Because I know there's several of customers, or I get assessed that assessment.
Mayor, the understanding in reading this is that if you intend to protest your assessment, that you would have to declare a conflict on that. If you do not have any problem with your assessment, then you would be okay. Councilmember Whalen, because he does not have the ability to determine whether his customers would have a conflict or protest of that assessment, he should probably declare a conflict. Now, I'm not sure what you did on March 3rd, Mayor, but if you wanted to remain consistent on that, you could certainly continue to declare a conflict if you did at that time.
I probably did. I don't. Okay. So let's, over the years, I've always declared a conflict. I think I'll just be consistent. Yes. And because it's May 19th now, if it was June 3rd, then I could come in and protest it myself.
Protest. Right now. No, there's a 2-year ban.
So let's have 7A removed. Takes us to page 11. Okay, on 7D, the pipeline, the sale of the land, is that actually next to an existing gas line, so it's not disrupting the saleability of the rest of the land in that area? Is that my understanding?
Morning, Mayor, that is correct. The new pipeline is going to be next to and adjacent to the El Paso natural gas pipeline.
Okay. I was trying to look at the map, and mine wasn't really clear when I was trying to figure out exactly where it was. So, and I'm comfortable with the price, but I did want to check that. All right, thanks. Anything else? Page 11? Page 12? Ordinances starting, Vice Mayor?
Actually, it's on 13, sorry.
Okay, let's try page 13.
It's my understanding that item 8F, is that the, do I have the right one, John? Is going back to planning and zoning. There's site plan modifications that are taking place. And so this one is then being deleted. Is that what's happening, or is it just being continued? It'll have to be reintroduced.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, yes, it'll have to be reintroduced. And so I think the motion on Monday would be to refer it back to P&Z. And it probably could even be stated today that that's what you're going to do. It could be on consent for that to happen on Monday.
Can we put it on the consent agenda for referral back to planning and zoning?
Right. Yes.
Any objection to doing that, Daryl? All right. Why don't we read it in that way if the applicant and everybody are in concurrence? Mr. Truitt.
Some neighbors emailing me in opposition to this, so I'm going to suggest that we may end up pulling that, but I think we'll have people here to talk about it.
Okay, once a blue card comes in, it gets pulled automatically. You want to pull it in advance?
Nope.
Okay. All right, that's 12, 13. That would do it. Let's go back to the study session items. Item number 2 is here, a presentation to discuss the Enterprise Document Management Project, and this relates to item 5H on the council meeting agenda.
Good morning, Mayor. I am Alex Deschick, Manager of Technology and Innovation. This is Diane Gardner, the Assistant CIO. This morning we're going to be talking about a very successful project that has begun a little while ago. It's Document Management, Enterprise Document Management Project. Also, we'll do a brief review of my role within the city. I'm currently in a new position. I've been here 8 weeks, and I'm going to discuss that a bit, and also a little bit about my vision for technology for the city moving forward. What we've done in this group, and the city manager's brought together a great group, is take three unique groups that are going to help us through a partnership with business and technology. Communications group, which provides the wireless infrastructure for the city, public safety, radios and such. Information technology, the group that provides all the PCs, the technology you're seeing today. The third group in this triangle is the management performance and accountability group. They're the group that brings a business focus into these solutions. They really provide us with the organization, the people, as well as the process improvement and management of those issues. Really going to be focusing our technology on the business results and not technology for technology's sake. The future of technology within the city is really to align our IT with our business from the top down. We're really looking to do strategic initiatives across the city, and that's going to require the support of the city manager's office. I report directly to the assistant city manager, and having that buy-in from that group on down is going to allow us to implement citywide initiatives. In doing so, we're going to look to reduce silos of automation across the city, focusing on strategic cross-departmental solutions. IT is going to help in those processes. We're going to focus on business process and improvement. IT is not going to bring solutions to the to the city. We're going to bring options, and the businesses will have to see which ones best suit their business needs and solve those problems. We're going to focus on the results. The projects we're going to bring forward to the council are going to have measurable results, return on investments, cost savings, business process improvements. But at the end, we have to make sure they all meet the business goals, which means the projects are going to be on time, on schedule, and on budget. And again, the words that keep showing up and will show up throughout, as long as I'm here working with IT, is business and not technology. You'll see business the focus. Technology is the enabler to solve the business problems. And we have to learn the priorities of the business. It's not IT's priorities. It's the business's priorities on what gets done first. And technology, we'd be doing everything first, but the cool stuff comes first. But we have to solve the business problems. If we don't solve the business problems, we haven't provided any value for the city. And that's a cultural change within information technology. In doing so, we have to make sure all our projects and all the staff understand that what they're doing provides value for the business, from the lowest person in the organization up to the managers and all the directors in the organization. We're going to ask them to look internally on what they do day to day and see how it provides business results to some project. If it doesn't do that, we're going to ask them why they're doing it. If they're not doing it for a business result, they shouldn't be doing it. And the leaders, the business leaders, as we go through these processes, are going to have to provide leadership and sponsorship. So we're going to be working with the deputy city managers, department heads, to provide executive sponsorship on all these key initiatives. And it's going to come from the top, the leadership. But while we do that, IT is a profession. We have to make sure that all these things work. They have to be as reliable as the lights. When you walk into your office in the morning, the technology systems need to be there. We can't function without them these days. And of course, we've got to keep the customer focus. Our customers internally are all the business units, the council, and all the citizens of Mesa. Looking at the project here, the name is Enterprise Document Management System. And when I looked at that, I said, well, what does that really mean? And I came up with, well, it's a paperless office. You know, like, and I said, well, paperless office, I mean, weren't we supposed to have that 20 years ago? Where'd it go? You know, where has it been for those 20 years? And where it's been is it was technology-led 20 years ago. You know, we thought we could do this. You know, the scanner's here. We can just throw paper there, scan it, and we're done with it, and, you know, we move on. But technology-led it. That's not the way we should do projects. And ultimately, paper's not going to go away, so the paperless office is somewhat of a myth. But today, we've got the technology. We've been working with the business, and we've got a very successful example of working towards this paperless office in this enterprise document management project. Diane's going to go into some detail on the successes we've had so far and in the actions we're going to ask the council to consider to go forward to make this more citywide.
When you say document management, it means a lot of things to different people. So we kind of threw up some of the basics related to scanning paper to electronic and some of the routing processes that this system brings to us. It also is in line with our records retention schedules that we do need to retain the paper based on the type of document. initial goals of the project, really the very initial goals, were to improve that response time and the staff that we need. Our first focus really was to contain the paper, basically to be able to provide access to that information to everyone who needed it, as opposed to whoever happened to be closest to the room that had the boxes filled with the paper. And our departments basically have rooms filled with boxes and a lot of staff time spent searching for information that everybody else needs. And we do need to maximize how we retain our records, because we will need to keep many of them for 7 years, 20 years, and permanently. So phase one, in 2006, the city committed $1.5 million to the Enterprise Document Management Program. We first focused basically in putting the hardware, the software, the storage that was needed for an enterprise view of this for the city. And we also selected several particular departments who could provide us very real examples as to how this was going to work in our environment and did this system deliver on what was promised. With our initial licensing, we're also able to go into four other departments, and we're going to speak to some of those successes in just a moment. What we're here for today is to go to that next step, which is to expand it to additional departments throughout the city. We have at minimum 12 additional departments that could show real benefits from using the tools and the capabilities of this system, and that's what the request on the council agenda for is the remaining project funds of $256,000. In addition, it's key to be able to repurpose this information back out via the web to residents, to developers, to employees, to people who don't necessarily use the document management system but still need access to the information. So in this phase, we want to work on that piece of the project. But most of all, we want to talk to you about the successes that we've seen with this system. As Alex said, it's not about plugging in the storage and putting in the hardware and the software. It's about how these businesses are truly using the information and using the system. And our Mesa Municipal Court is one of a very shining example. Court Administrator Paul Thomas is also here to speak to this if you have specific questions. A variety of processes are into the system, parking tickets, photo safety, and just recently we've experienced a paperless courtroom, if you will, and you may have seen the news release on this, where Judge Hazel was actually able to conduct a civil traffic session without paper, able to bring up the traffic ticket, bring up the motor vehicle file document that was filed with court, rule electronically, look at the case information electronically. The entire thing was handled without passing a piece of paper. There's many other things that court has to do and different processes they're working through, and obviously the automatic retention is going to be huge for us in being able, based on the type of document, to automatically dispose of it when appropriate. In City Prosecutor's Office, they have a room filled to the brim with completed cases, and so they're starting the scanning of those 86,000 cases. As each item is scanned, it is shredded, recycled, and the room space is immediately freed up, as is the information is then available. But in the Prosecutor's Office, we're also able to look at some of the workflow capability of this system, where we actually take a process of reviewing complaints from filings of charges, the different people who have to be involved in that process, the prosecutors, the legal review. There's an electronic handoff that's occurring as each one of them reviews the document, applies their electronic signature, and it automatically routes to the next person, ultimately landing in a filing electronically in the court. So that's what the capabilities are to be able to hand off between departments, including as we work with the police department for that necessary connection. They, too, have had for 10 years a document management system, and they'll be coming before you shortly to bring their system up to the same enterprise version that we have across the city so that we can really enabling that sharing among departments as we pass information.
One of the problems with this has been that you use technology to scan the documents to get them into a system, and then that technology becomes obsolete. What then happens to everything that you've done up to that point?
Well, the documents can be scanned in a number of ways and stored. It can be stored in the native format of the document. So if it's a Word document, it can be stored as a Word. If it's an image, it can be stored in image format. And you know, it's an upgrade process. It's a life cycle process that we have to take into consideration with all systems. It's not just document imaging. Anything that we create digitally has the opportunity in the future to be obsolete as Microsoft and other companies update their systems. We've got to stay with that. So part of what we look at projects going forward is not just a one-time investment, it's life cycle costs.
So at some point, do you transfer it from, you know, say technology X no longer even exists, the company goes out of business,
how do you get everything that has been stored under the system of technology X into technology Y?
And it's usually not an issue of a company going out of business, usually of just staying current more so. Occasionally that can happen, but the idea is again, life cycle, we plan ahead for the upgrades, and they're part of the costs that we bring before you.
As the media changes and we have to move it to the next level or flavor of that media.
Okay, thank you.
Kyle? The clarifying too, this is our databases that you're creating, that as the technology changes, you just transfer that database over.
Correct.
You're using a web-based platform to access all of this. So the databases are sitting out there, and if the software to access it changes, all you do is shift those databases. So the data is always there in the format you've created, or you can transfer it to another format if need be.
Correct.
And that's just a stroke of a key. It's not rescanning everything and stuff because it's gone.
I understand that it's not rescanning. It's happened within my own system at home. We had a technology that we were using on a previous computer, and now that doesn't exist anymore. So we have to maintain that old computer in order to be able to access all of those scanned documents. And so I was thinking about, you know, how that applies even on a larger scale. I did read something a couple of months ago about libraries that are doing technology-based things, and they're concerned about this, about, you know, when the technology becomes obsolete, how do you stay current? But you said to me that what you're doing is you're factoring that into the cost of you know, the life cycle of the system.
Yes, and you're correct. The technology will become obsolete. I mean, everyone remembers the little floppy disks with computers. They don't sell them anymore. If you've got a box in their garbage, you might as well throw them out. But that's the plans that we have, is, you know, forward thinking, looking at technology, not staying on the leading edge, cutting edge, but staying current with the technology. And it does involve changes in the physical things, as Councilor Jones said, but the front end to the users will remain the same, or maybe the look and feel will change. It's where the data is stored in the back end, the formats it's stored in will change over the years, but the information will still be there. The data is still there. It's in a different format.
Planning Division was also one of the departments involved in the first part of the project. They have actually 16,000 plus documents scanned now, and you'll see some of the type of document types that will be available. The wonderful thing about this, instead of having to go to planning staff to say, please give me this information, there's a wide variety of staff across the city now who can view and search for this information themselves, and they are actually part of what we're going to look at in phase two, to be able to provide this information to developer and residents for applications, approvals, that type of information. We are also able to go into these departments with the licensing in the first phase. Environmental and building safety have many of the same things in terms of needing to scan paper in and be able to search and retrieve that information. We're working through the job descriptions of human resources, and engineering is our other system in the city that also already had document management, and we're bringing them up again to the same enterprise version so that across the city we'll all have the same version. And so what's next is we're seeking the funding to go through the licensing and scanners for these 12 departments, from utilities to the fire investigation reports to work in the city clerk's office, city manager, communications. And it also, because of the workflow capabilities of this system, introduces the opportunity things like a citywide contracts repository, where we can truly manage our contracts, make them viewable, available, searchable across the city through that type of process. Finally, as we mentioned, police will be here to talk about their secure upgrade of their 10-year-old system so that we can further enable what they do with court and prosecutor and the electronic handoff of information, and focus on providing that access to citizens in the web. We're very excited about this system. We'd be happy to demo it to any of you individually to show you what the system can do and make it a little more real for you. And have any questions?
Questions on the item? Thank you. I guess I do have one. You said doing it for business results, and the prioritization, there's been some talk that I picked up through some of the discussions and the debates for the new mayor candidates that are running for office, talking about figuring out what the mission of the city is and then working towards it. Comes through a little the city manager, and I think one of the things is being efficient, being transparent, getting the information out. There's also, you mentioned the cost recovery, and how can you be more efficient with the technology? So are you seeing that by not having a paper trail from an officer in the field that gives it to somebody to input, but they input it directly themselves. I mean, just as an example, what are some examples of ways that we can not have to hire as many employees or eliminate some positions by doing direct data entry on the first step as opposed to scanning a document that was created to input it? Yeah. Is that where you're talking about on some of the court documents, or getting closer to that? Or
the one part that you talked about was e-ticketing. That's a decision that the police need to address to get that full electronic flow. And that's something other governments are doing around the valley. But that could potentially, in that situation, completely create a paperless environment with traffic citations or other citations from the point of offering that citation up to the adjudication.
But even to today's examples with the photo radar or the parking tickets, the system actually is receiving an electronic ticket, not a paper we're having to scan. And then rather than having anybody key in the actual ticket, we're actually able to grab that barcode and through optical character recognition read it into the system, which then in turn can go grab that information from another system and package it all for the person. So we're not keying that information and trying to connect it. We're electronically putting that together.
And so how would you do an analysis of the, let's take the example of like the court system today versus 5 years ago and the manpower and time used to process X amount of documents through the system? Can you show a benefit and a cost savings that more than justifies the $250,000 in this case that we're talking about contracting? Right.
Mayor, members of council, we could do that. We could start to try to attach dollars saved, but there's a much bigger picture here in that for a court, when you incorporate technology into the court environment and you employ it with respect to each and every manual process you have to do, the efficiencies, you gain efficiencies over time. The example of civil traffic citations, we deal with probably 80,000 civil traffic citations that have to get filed with the court. Now, the photo safety side of it is done completely electronically, but the citations the officers filed are still paper. So a clerk has to do the data entry off of that citation into our database, and it takes time and staff effort to do that. So as Alex was mentioning, a next step for us will be to have the officers electronically file that citation and eliminate that manual process of all of that data entry that relates to those civil traffic citations. So the more of those kinds of processes we automate instead of using the manual effort, you gain in terms of staff time, not having to hire additional people. The photo safety program, for example, had we not been able to do that completely electronically, we would have had a huge data entry effort to make with respect to all those photo safety citations. So we do that electronically. We did not have to add staff for the several thousand photo safety citations that come in. So from the court's point of view, we try to take every advantage of where we can employ automation, either through electronic transfer or more recently with document imaging to create that information electronically and not have to deal with paper. We currently have at the court 96,000 files sitting on the shelf that we have to access every day. In the new court building, for example, it's a three-story building. We expect to have a lot of this electronic prior to moving in the new court building because we don't want to have to shuffle 96,000 files across a three-story building to make things work manually. So we can go back and try to look at those dollar savings, but they're very inherent in terms of what we do in making all of this process efficient and replacing every manual process with automation wherever we can find to do that.
But It sounds like it would be somewhat intuitive that an officer, if he could do an electronic ticket and enter the data, then it goes right through the system, as opposed to writing one out and then having somebody else have to re-enter it later. But some, I mean, but that's a whole new training aspect for officers. They're going to have to be fairly efficient to get the data in, and somebody that's doing 10,000 of those is probably pretty fast data entry. Compared to the officer that's out there typing in on his laptop, he could probably get four or five an hour.
Well, somebody else is. The technology for e-ticketing is become pretty sophisticated. It's really point and click. It's not a lot
touch of screens. And
yeah, it's point and click kind of technology where you just do check boxes, and it's not a lot of. We're not going to turn our offices into clerks, believe me.
That technology has been tested in Tucson, Mayor, very successfully. So the Supreme Court actually put some money into testing that technology in Tucson. One of the issues with that has been, historically, it's no longer an issue, was the environment, the tremendous heat out on the street for the types of units that officers would have to carry, especially motor officers. So several years ago, there was a bad experience that the heat was too much for the units they were using, and they've overcome that now, so we're back to employing that. But the test cases in Tucson, they're doing that very successfully. The officers in the field, our reports are, it's taking just a matter of a few seconds. They're scanning licenses and everything right in the field, so there's not even a lot of data entry with the officer in the field.
So is there a direct savings on incorporating this $250,000 that we will see a reduction someplace else and more than that $250,000 in other operations as we grow? We wouldn't need to put on additional people? Or how specific can you get on cost recovery when we make these expenditures?
Well, we have the physical space recovery that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. So there's physical building space.
Site storage, processing.
There's archiving of records for years, which is very expensive. As Diane said, the technology allows us to electronically accept signatures and use those as legal documents, so we no longer have to archive these records for a number of years. And that can be very expensive. There are some opportunities for staff improvements, and that'll be different on each specific department on where we see those.
So if we, instead of spending $250,000, we spend $1 million, four times as much. What's the return? Is it greater than that four, or do you have to do this in incremental chunks anyway? I'm trying to figure out if technology or embracing more is kind of a magic bullet to help Mesa through its budget crunch with them hiring and efficiency, doing more with more technology, less employees, and there's a savings someplace. So.
Yeah, Mayor, I think that we're trying. I think that's something that we continue to look at, and that's one of the reasons that we created the position that Alex is in, is so that we can look at, as he mentioned first, our currently, you know, business. Well, we look at our business processes and how to improve that, and it really comes from both an efficiency of savings of staff, and there's no doubt that we can begin to quantify that, because the question can become both, can we reduce the effort of staffing today, and also what staffing do we avoid having to hire with increasing citations and activity, which no doubt has come. You don't see us coming forward with a lot of additional positions at that level for data entry, because we've been able to improve the technology's allowed us to avoid some of that. But also is significant. I think we talked about it a little bit in this presentation. But what this also does from a public perspective is it provides information readily accessible to the public that today otherwise would have to come down and make a request for a hard copy and wait for someone to search it. Ultimately, one of our goals here is to use technology also from a customer service perspective to access government, all our the appropriate records, so individuals can have that information readily available, whether it's going through zoning cases, whether it's having building safety information, any variety of information that the customer now, hopefully, at some point will be able to literally access off a website. And that's part of, now how do you quantify that? But that's an important role of what we do. But I think we can probably begin, if the council would like, and spend more time driving the cost savings or cost reductions and savings to the future. But I just want to be careful that's not the full picture. You know, but then how do you value the opportunity now that the public has access to I don't know, some kind of zoning, planning and zoning document that before they had to spend their time driving down to the city, filling out a piece of paperwork, waiting for that to be retrieved. So those are the kind of things we'd have to look at.
Okay. I know we did a huge program to do the as-builds as we're doing streets and undergrounds. Mm-hmm. And that became very apparent in the difference between Tempe and Phoenix and Mesa when the light rail came through, is trying to locate all of these different utilities. So I'm a little bit more familiar with the savings that you can really incur by having good drawings for a contractor going in there to work, because it's much faster and more accurate. And then the same thing, if you've got an emergency brake, you know exactly where everything's located with the GPS, and you can go out there and find them now. So I was just trying to get a number on it, if it's kind of the magic bullet. I appreciate the explanation.
Let us keep looking at that, because I think that's something we probably need to come up with a standard to be able to evaluate and give a report on those savings, in addition to what the customer service values and things like that. We certainly can take an effort to project how this can help mitigate those savings in the future. Based on our experience recently with this program, we've already started seeing a payback with the efficiencies of staff, and less people having to touch a piece of paper, literally can sit at their desk and access that same information. So that productivity is already being seen today.
All right. Thanks. Let's move on then to item number 3. Hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on the annexation process. This again relates to items 6, E, F, and G on our agenda for Monday night.
Good morning, Mayor, morning. Council members. I'm Tammy Albright. I'm with Building Safety. This is Laura Heineman. She's with Planning. We're here to talk to you about the changes to the annexation process. Just to recap, in April of 07, last year, Council gave staff direction that said, if you are located in a county island, you can be annexed, and if you want city services, you need to annex. These were to, for the goals, sustainable development, required development pay for itself. One of the other issues we were having is people were developing in the county then annexing, so it was to discourage that, and to help us create a stronger partnership with the county. There are a lot of moving parts to this, so I'm going to go ahead and real quickly give you an overview of what's going to be in front of you. On Monday night, April 21st, you will have the introduction of 3 ordinances. Title IX, modifications to Title IX, which will remove the requirement or the waiver that allows single-family properties less than 1 acre to not be responsible for their offsites. Basically, we're saying that they should be responsible for their offsites like all other developments. It'll introduce the ordinance to modify the terms and conditions, which will remove the sections in the terms and conditions that allow somebody to receive city services without annexation. It will modifications to Title 11, which is the zoning code. It will be to change the zoning ordinance so that it refers to the new guidelines, annexation guidelines. On May 5th, you'll be asked to take action on the resolution to adopt a new annexation equity fee and to modify the annexation application fee. You'll also take action on the resolution to adopt a new annexation guidelines. Also on May 5th will be to take action on the 3 ordinances that are going to be introduced on Monday night. It's important to note that the effective date of all of these ordinances and resolutions will come together and be effective, if approved, on July 1. The completed steps that we have completed already, December, the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee reviewed all of these changes and the proposed fees and recommended approval. On February 14th, we had a general discussion with the council and talked about what do we do with those properties that the city may not want to annex, and how we might handle those. And we built into the process an ability for you as council to grant city services without annexation. On February 14th, the Audit and Finance Committee asked Council to explore a 100% cost recovery on the annexation application fee. On February 21st, the Planning and Zoning Board recommended approval of the entire process changes and the 100% cost recovery fee. And on March 27th, the Audit and Finance heard all of the fees again and recommended a 50% cost recovery fee on the annexation application.
I'd like to describe the three annexation scenarios that exist in Mesa's planning area. We have vacant parcels that are located in County Island and eligible for annexation. Those properties will pay impact fees when they develop, and they'll be required to install off-site improvements and on-site improvements that comply with our city standards. We have developed property that has either received a state or county permit or is completely developed in the county that's located in a county island eligible for annexation. Currently, they do not pay any fees to the city, nor are they required to install developments that comply with our standards. They just need to meet county standards. And then the third scenario is property that's located in within Mesa's planning area, but it's not located in a county island, or there may be service challenges on that site which do not make annexation of that property in the best interest of the city. So what we're proposing today really applies just to developed property, property that's developed in the county that is interested in annexation into the city. We're establishing an annexation agreement, which is very similar to the utility service agreement that we have with people that receive city utilities. As part of that agreement, we will discuss an annexation equity fee that is equivalent to the impact fees that a property owner would pay if they were to develop in Mesa. In that agreement, we'll also talk about the required off-site improvements or in-lieu costs that they would need to pay as part of their annexation. We have provided you with a full-size flowchart in your packet that describes the process and how these two pieces fit into the overall annexation process for developed property. You'll notice the second step establishes that annexation agreement. It gives staff the opportunity to talk with Deputy City Manager. Perhaps some of the requirements in place really are not appropriate for this site. It allows staff some discretion there and to be fair with applicants interested in annexation. We'll execute that agreement provide the applicant that agreement, let him know what he's responsible for, what we will be providing. They can either choose to agree or to comply with that agreement, or they can appeal it to the TIC, or they can withdraw the case. Also in the flow chart, it shows the step in the process where the council can determine that this annexation is not in the best interest of the city, but there's a hardship that exists and we really should execute a utility service agreement. I'd also like to talk to you a little bit about the fees that we're proposing, annexation application fee changes. We're proposing a new methodology. Previously, we just based it on the size of the annexation, proposed annexation. If it was less than 5 acres, it was a $270 fee. If it was more than 5 acres, well, it is $540. We're proposing to establish a base fee, either 50% at $1,300 or 100% at $2,600. And then for each additional property owner that joins into that annexation application, they will be required only a 10% increase in that fee. So what I provided you was some examples. If 10 property owners came together, submitted an application under the 50% cost recovery model, they would actually be paying $247 per parcel, which is less than they would pay now for an annexation application. That would be per property owner involved. If you were to approve the 100% cost recovery model and 10 property owners came together in a single annexation proposal, they would be paying $494, which most likely would be less than they would be paying today, because by the time you get 10 properties together, rarely is it less than 5 acres in size. I'd also like to touch upon that base fee and how we calculated it, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about what is that base fee and what does it include. It basically includes staff time to process these annexations. There are three departments that often choose to visit sites. One is fire. They want to make sure that the roadways, which may be paved or unpaved, are capable of supporting the fire apparatus, and also they're very interested in finding out what the hydrant spacing is and the hydrant location. So if they're called for service, they know they can provide service. I've talked to Willie Black, and the Solid Waste Department Division visits a site if it is in an unimproved area of the city. If, again, they want to evaluate whether or not they can provide services to that property. If it's located in an established subdivision that we know has streets, then there's no need for them to visit the site. The third is code compliance. A lot of these properties are located in the county. They may or may not have uses on them that comply with our codes. One part of the annexation process is when that property is annexed into the city of Mesa, we need to establish what's called comparable zoning. So if the zoning in the county is rural 43, which allows a single dwelling on an acre parcel, when it comes into the city, we provide comparable zoning, which in our case is R143, again, a single dwelling on an acre site. If there are uses that are occurring on that site that may not comply with R143, we need to work with that applicant to get those uses brought into compliance, or we need to work with them, and this often happens, to rezone their property. As long as it conforms to our general plan, maybe rezoning is appropriate to allow for the use that they have on their property. So those are the three that visit sites. It was that those staff costs that was used to determine that $2,600 base fee. We are proposing no fee changes to the transportation infrastructure appeal fee. We're just combining two fees. Had been a $1,200 preparation fee and a $300 hearing fee, combining those for a single $1,500 fee. And then, of course, the new annexation equity fee really is this fee that applies only to developed property that is equivalent to what property owners of vacant property will be paying as we move forward. We wanted to provide you an example of what these fees would be for a developed piece of property interested in annexing. So we have two examples on this page. The first example is a site which contains a single dwelling unit. The annexation equity fee would be $3,620. That would cover the equivalent to the impact fees for that single dwelling unit. And also, we have identified what the in-lieu off-site costs would be that would be paid with the new annexation equity fee. We also showed what happens when a lot is located with two frontages. You'll notice that in-lieu fee goes up significantly from $13,000 to $36,000. That's because now there are street improvements required for two streets.
We should note, too, in these two examples, this is in the Desert Uplands, and the linear foot fee per street frontage is $80. Elsewhere in the city, it's $100. So the fees you're seeing in front of you are based on the lower fees up in the Desert Uplands area. Also note that the water and sewer are true impact fees and only paid upon connection. All other ones are what's being used as a measurement to create the annexation equity fee.
We wanted to talk to you a little bit about implementation. We have quite a few applications that have been made. In 2006, we received 20 applications. In 2007, 45. And to date, we've already received 23 applications, and we're only in April. So we've got quite a few applications that are in the process. When they applied, they were not aware of these changes, and these changes have not been adopted. So we're going to give that group a little bit of time to decide whether or not they want to annex into the city or not. The process for annexations, we generally provide staff comments to an applicant, and we will be letting them know what improvements we require and what fees will be associated with their annexation. If they decide they would like to continue with annexation, they submit what we call a course of action statement. So we're stating that all applicants who have submitted that course of action statement to the city, when these, should you choose to adopt these changes, when they become effective July 1, 2008, they would be allowed to proceed down the path that exists today. Everyone who comes in pretty much after April 30th will need to comply with these new this new annexation equity fee and annexation agreement should you choose to adopt it when it becomes effective July 1, 2008. We are putting together letters for everyone that's in the system. We've been talking to everybody who's applied for annexation, let them know that these changes are in play, are proposed. We also have the information out on our website, so this shouldn't surprise anyone that these changes might take effect in July. We are updating an annexation brochure, which is designed to really help people understand the annexation process. Many of these people have never been through the annexation process before and probably never will again. It is complex, so we want to make it very simple for them to understand the steps that are required. We're going to partner with the county so that people that are submitting building permits in the county are made aware of the new annexation equity fee if they need to come to the city of Mesa for water city services. And we're looking at handing the brochure out to all property owners outside the city limits. If you have any questions for us, we're willing to answer those.
Questions or comments? So the discussion as far as full cost recovery or partial has not been made. So that's why you're giving the two examples?
Yes.
As in committee recommendations. So when does that take place? When does that, is that decision for Monday night? Is that?
That decision is for May 5th.
Okay.
Yes. You'll be making that decision on May 5th.
Okay. There are some other issues as far as water that is currently in areas that, you know, I think there were some older water companies that we bought or acquired, and there's water lines, but not everybody hooked up. How does all that fall into, if you're on a street, but you never hooked up because you had a well, and now you want to hook up to the city's water out in front? Is that another
Mayor, they would follow the same rules and regulations as everyone else because that would now be our water line. We've had this come up a couple of times, and in the terms and conditions, there was a section that says if they were previously hooked up to it at the time we buy it, then we maintain that. And they wouldn't obviously pay any kind of a fee. Anybody who would go into hookup after we purchased it would follow these rules.
All right, what happens then? Does the city then do an evaluation of the cost to run a water line to a lot that wants to annex to see if there's cost recovery? Because you may be skipping six or eight other lines and then you finally get to the one that's looking for annexation. How does that work if you're extending existing lines?
Mayor, the city does not extend the lines for somebody who's requesting service. They would have to hire an engineer, extend the line, and then we certainly could set up a private line buy-in. And then anybody in between where they had to start the connection to their property who hooked into that over the next 10 years would pay their fair share for their frontage. The city would collect for them and get that money to the person who installed the line. If no one connects within 10 years, and they're the ones that put that line in, the city does not do those extensions.
Is that similar to what we do in subdivision developments too? The developer is responsible for running the main out to his development, so it's that's the same pattern.
And we'll be making applicants aware of this because that might encourage them to talk to the neighbors that are between where the line is now and where their home is, to encourage them to all come in together so they can share the cost of installing that line.
Okay. All right. Other questions on this one then? All right. Thank you. We'll see it again, I'm sure. Number four is here a presentation to discuss the baseline siphon project emergency procurement.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Earlier this year, we initiated a project to do some repair work on the sanitary sewer that crosses under the freeway, the 101 at Baseline Road at Price. The project was originally built by ADOT about 15 or 16 years ago. We've recently, if you've been out, we've got a number of pumps set up and pipes, which you can see in the photo there, running across the bridge. We're currently bypassing about 20 million gallons of wastewater a day as it flows west out of the city towards the 91st Avenue plant. We've got it all dried out now, and we've found some things that are running into us, a place where we need to do an emergency procurement to repair while we're in there. So if you look at the aerial photo, the existing sewer is in yellow. It starts at the across on the right side of the photo and comes across, then drops down. There are three pipes under, and it then comes back up and crosses into Tempe. And then we're currently, the orange line is where we're currently bypassing. We've got the pumps and the pipes set up. When we came across, we then went back into the pipe now that it's dry. And we have found that there are two structures that are in the pipeline that were not on the as-built that we were not aware of. They are concrete structures. They are significantly deteriorated. And I've got some photos I'll show you. Those structures are actually about 34 feet deep. One is located here on the east. You can see kind of where I've got the mouse. And then there's another one on the west as it comes back up. Originally, those as-builts showed the curvilinear sewer in there, and ADOT at some point elected to put concrete unlined structures in. This is a structure coming into the structure on the east side of the freeway. This section right up here, we've lost concrete rebar, and pretty much you can stick a screwdriver into the dirt at this point of the structure. It's pretty well deteriorated and gone. You can see coming in from the pipe what it's like. West side, this is the same structure on the west side, and you can see the exposed rebar. We're not quite all the way through the rebar in this side, but these are not good conditions, and while we're in here, what we'd like to do is go ahead and get these repaired, as well as this is a 54-inch pipe on the west side. We've got some joints failing. So what we're doing right now is we've gone ahead and authorized an emergency procurement, which you will be seeing on council agenda probably in May. It does. We do have a full bypass set up, which is about half the cost of this contract. It's a $2.9 million contract currently. About half of that we're paying to do the bypass pumping at a rate of about $15,000 a day plus the equipment. So while we have this dried up and down, we want to go ahead and do this repair. We looked at several options. Open pit excavation is just really not feasible. We are under the concrete approach ramps. It would be significant disruption in cost. What we're going to do and what we've set up to do is an in-situ form type cured-in-place liner that we can do without any excavation. It is a large pipe, so we have to do a structural lining. We don't want to lose that structure over time later. So we will use a cured-in-place liner like this. When it's done and it's cured, it'll be like this. We just leave the pipe completely dry, invert the lining into it, cure it in place. And then what we'll do with the structures to make sure the structures are stabilized, we're going to drill down into the structures and grout fill them. But that does cost, we're estimating currently about $490,000 to do these repairs. The current contract is around $2.9 million, the contingency of just under $300,000. We're estimating the cost of the change to be around $490,000 to $500,000. That does put it over our 10% contingency, so we are going into an emergency procurement mode. We found this about 2 weeks ago. We've been working with the contractor, and we've ordered the necessary liners to go into it and still anticipate that this project will be completed on time by doing an emergency procurement. So we will be back next month with an authorization to approve the final contract award for this amount, but we wanted to let you know what we saw and what was happening out there.
I don't think you have much choice.
No, we don't.
All right, questions? Okay, thank you. Number five, hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on utility department budget issues and future rate adjustments. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember-elect Richens had a previous engagement, so he isn't joining us today, and I just wanted everybody in the audience to know I got in a baking mood last night, and there are cookies in the kitchen, and you're welcome to go help yourself.
One has nothing to do with the other.
No. Alex is coming up for the cookies. Is that what you meant to say?
That's what I'm saying.
Thank you, Mayor. City Council. My name is Jack Friedline, and I'm besides the deputy city one of the deputy city managers. I'm acting utilities manager, at least for an interim period, and I'm going to lead this discussion with reference to our utilities department budget. As you can see, as it is agendized, that it also we'll also after the presentation talk about future rate adjustments and the modeling that we do with reference to the five enterprise funds for the city. This is a an overview of the utilities department budget that describes how we are projecting year end for this year and also 2008 and 9. At the table, I have Alicia Solano, who's helped me put this PowerPoint together. And somewhere I have a total of five directors. I call them the Fab Five. You know Bill Haney, Marty Hunter, and Mike Comstock. Catherine Sorensen is, I think, in the back, and so is and Frank McRae is also here. So when they come, they can come up here, too. I'll try to answer just the outer surface of the onion as you like to peel it, then I'm going to immediately refer to our directors with reference to any of the harder questions whatsoever. This particular slide just outlines the functional organization of the utilities. It's broken into what I call four businesses. We have electric, gas, water, and wastewater. It's comprised of about $180 million budget. And if you look at the next slide, it'll show you the breakout of the full-time employees. We have approximately 336 employees. The way this slide is depicted is the way that we're moving towards with reference to running these more from a business aspect. We have decentralized administrative section and our resources section to accommodate the four businesses and to gain consistency in all of our processes and efficiencies. Within these full-time employees, there are eight new positions in the 08-09 budget that I'll refer to as I describe each of the four enterprises. This slide is a map of our service areas. In the upper left-hand corner, you'll see outlined Mesa's planning area in the red, which is our sewer service area. The blue dotted line depicts our water service area, and the minimal differences, especially on the east side, would be the Arizona Water Company. In the lower right-hand corner is our MAGMA gas service area, obviously very large, even larger than City of Mesa. Currently, we have about 12,000 accounts in MAGMA that represents about 23% of our customer base, and I'll speak to that when we talk about the gas system and how that's growing. Well, first, talk about our electric program, what I call is our electric enterprise business. These slides will be similar for all four businesses, and they just give you a general depiction of the budget summaries with beginning fund balances for this enterprise. Depicts the revenues that we project for year end and a comparison for the 08-09 budget. And as you see, we have also depicted the transfers out and the ending fund balance for 08-09. I believe that the comparable revenues and expenditures reflect good business practices for this enterprise and a capital program that will be enhanced over time. And we'll talk about that a little bit later also. This capital program, the difference in the budget with reference to dollars, depicts $0 in bond sales for this year, where we were using cash, about $5 million approximately. And for the 08-09, we have sold bonds for that this council just approved, authorized bonds. Some of the projects include converting our system from a 4 kV to a 12 kV system, an enhancement that's going to, number one, give us up-to-date transformers, and also will minimize our energy loss as we distribute it to our customers. Transmission improvements along University, where we have a major 69 kV transmission line that needs some attention. If you remember, we had an evaluation presentation to council a few months ago, and part of that was a capital improvements program assessment. Yes, Vice Mayor.
Vice Mayor.
I have a couple of questions on the electric stuff, Jack. What kind of loss are you currently experiencing, and what kind of revenue savings are you anticipating as a result of not losing the electric? Additionally, does the conversion from the 4 kV to the 12 kV impact current residents who have, you know, purchased like air conditioning units or other appliances that are stepped in a different way?
I'll speak to that generally, and then I'll refer to Marty. The losses we're talking about are just transmission and distribution losses, and I think at best it would be 2%. The service transformers that we're going to replace shouldn't affect any homes whatsoever. If they have three-phase system, we'll keep it at three-phase. We'll interview the customers to see if we can convert to single phase, because that's in both our interest and theirs. But where they have older equipment, especially air conditioners with three phase, we're going to continue to keep that. You might want to add to that, Marty.
Councilwoman Walters, that is correct. We do not impact the customer in any way when we convert. We strive to convert their system to a single phase if it's possible without any impact on the customer, but we maintain the three-phase service if that's what they have.
Okay, that's important. And I really thought we were losing more than 2% off of our old.
I don't have an exact number. I will get one for you, but you're gaining efficiency when you go from 69 kV to 12 kV rather than to 4, and then that loss across the transformer does equate to a number, but I don't have that number right now, and I'll make sure we get that number for you.
And when you get that number for me, can you tell me what that equates to in terms of dollar cost?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And thirdly, on this slide, we have approximately 600 volts that we use for our distribution system. It needs attention, and we're going to see to that we have a long-term program implemented to be sure that those vaults are either replaced or kept in good maintenance. This next slide, and I apologize for how busy it is, it's just a visual depiction of, through a bar graph, our revenue projections, and through a line graph, our expenditures, and how they equate to each other. As you can see, the bar graph depicts from left to right our budgeted revenue projections. The middle bar is what our actual revenues, and for the last quarter are projected, and also in 08-09 our budgeted projected revenues, and they're pretty consistent from what we budget and what we have in actual revenues. And you can see in the line graph, we have our expenditures for 07-08 in the orange. Sometimes the colors are different between the monitor and the computer. And also our expenditures, which are much lower, you'll see the difference there is $3 million, but we are making up that difference in an accelerated fashion with reference to some capital programs that we've been pushing since the beginning of this year and hope to have encumbered or carried over in the 08-09 budget. this is just a graph that gives you a general idea of what some view as a flat consumption graph with reference to our service area, although it is a slight increase over the years, about 2%. Again, another just visual for you on a pie graph. The focus that I'd like, this is about a $29 million budget, and you can see from the pie graph that much 68% of that is the purchase of power, which is an awfully important part of this business. And we have personnel that work full-time on ensuring that we, one, have a good power supply, and two, it's a competitive price. Some of the trends and issues, we mentioned the conversion from 4 kV to 12. We'd like to accelerate that and have it completed in 5 years. Execution of capital and maintenance programs consistent with our needs. Again, from the report, from a consultant report, it did bring to our attention some areas that we need to address. And we'll be coming back to City Council probably in May with a new contract for replacement of an EPCO contract that we had. It comprises about 34% of our energy supplies. That terminates in December, so we'll be working to present it to Council long before then, so we have a guaranteed energy supply.
Jack, I don't think you should have the word execution and discussion of electricity in the same...
Probably a bad choice.
Councilmember Jones has a question.
Yes. Jack, how are we doing on negotiating the new contract for that power?
I think we're doing very well. We did have proposals early on, about 4 or 5 months ago, when we've asked for updated proposals. And I think you'll be... obviously, there's always upward pressure on our power consumption costs. It's really a world market, and a lot of it really is influenced through the price of crude oil, and we'll talk about that in natural gas also. But it would be consistent with purchases for all electric utilities that have to deal with the world markets. So we'll expect some upward pressure. You'll see that on the expenditure and projected revenues for 08-09. But from working with Frank McRae and his folks, I'm pretty comfortable that we'll have a contract for you in May, June that will supplement or take over from the EPCO contract.
But are we going to be reasonably within the ballpark of where we are now? Is it going to be drastically different? I see Frank sitting behind you there.
Yeah. Frank, oh, there you
go. Good morning, Mayor and Councilmember Jones. We are looking at a substantial increase in the price over what the current EPCO contract price is. If we had been able to somehow continue the contract with EPCO, EPCO is facing a 40% increase in the costs of their doing business that they would end up flowing through to our contract because it's a cost-based contract. So regardless of whether the EPCO contract would have continued or we replace it, we would see a substantial increase in our cost. The types of costs that we're seeing in the market resources that we've issued a solicitation for is much less than that 40% increase. We're also negotiating some pricing provisions, and I can show you a graph of what it looks like, where the initial year's cost would be a lot less, and then you would see cost increases later on in the contract term, which is fairly consistent with what we would see if we had built the power plant ourselves, and you'd see escalating fuel prices out into the later years. And I can show you that graph if you'd like.
That's fine. I'm just curious how drastic a change we're looking at.
I would say at this point in time, without deviating from that standard pricing approach, we're probably looking at about $2 million in the first year because it's only 6 months of an entire contract year that fits in with the fiscal year. So a full year would be right in around $3.5 to $4 million, but I'm pretty confident that we're going to be able to negotiate this pricing provision that allows us to increase prices over time. That'll keep our cost in the lower years lower than they otherwise would be, and there'll be a minimal cost impact to our customers as a result of replacing the EPCO contract.
But also with the understanding that it's not unique to Mesa, it's everybody. The cost of generating power is going up.
If you look at region-wide, nationwide, and especially the local utilities, Arizona utilities, if they are acquiring incremental resources on generation transmission, they are facing upward pressure on their cost and on their rates, as well as other components of their system, generation, transmission, substations, customer service, metering, et cetera.
Okay, thank you.
The next slide, I think, is an important one. It compares what we'll call an average residential bill between the city of Mesa and SRP. And you can see the difference here of $2.78. And one of our goals is going to be a balancing act, but trying to pay more attention to our capital program, but at the same time gain efficiencies to try to be as competitive with SRP as we possibly can. And the other non-residential, just as a note, is a large portion of that non-residential, our City of Mesa buildings, which are in our service area. In summary, for 08.
Jack?
Yes.
How does that compare with last year? If we had sitting in front of us the residential comparison?
Maybe Frank can help me a little bit on that.
It's come down about half. I believe it was about 5%, 5 or 6% last year. If we had spoken same type of customer billing determinants. So it's been about cut in half, the percentage difference. As you know, SRP has started to increase their rates
question.
Gradually. I think, you know, their plan is to increase rates twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall, if not twice, at least once, and that's in the fall when they have a lowering from their summer period rates to their fall or winter period rates, and so they just simply decrease the amount of decrease in the transition from summer to winter.
Thank you.
But based upon the indications that we've had with our counterparts, they're on a trend of integrating rate increases in of substantial amounts, but phasing them in over small increments over time.
Thank you.
And in summary, we have no request for a rate increase for 08-09, but later in our presentation, we will be discussing rate adjustment scenarios for the four utilities that will also include some suggested increases to certainly cover at least inflationary increases in our fixed costs. Also, our capital needs, as I suggested, we're going to focus a lot more on those capital needs and ensure that our system is at or above satisfactory levels. And we talked a little bit about power contracts with reference to the EPCO contract. The next enterprise business is the gas program, and this is comparable to the same slide that we had in electric with the ending fund balance, revenues in this current year as projected, and then proposed for 08-09. Within this budget, we have our first what we call a budget adjustment request, and that is an increase with reference to personnel. And what in gas, it depicts a two-person crew that is needed to do a minimum maintenance on our gas distribution system and service lines. It has to do with growth, especially in the magma area, and the geographic spread with reference to that growth out in Southeast Valley. With reference to over 1,000 miles of gas mains and close to 400 miles of just service lines, 53,000 meters and 68 regulator stations, it's extremely important that we keep the system maintained, especially with the fact that it's regulated so heavily. in the CIP review, we have a what I think is a very satisfactory capital improvement program in gas. Some of the major projects are the obvious would be gas line extensions in the newer parts, especially Magma, gas line replacements in the older parts in Mesa, especially West Mesa, and with reference to that also service lines. Again, this is a visual depiction of our revenues through a bar graph and expenditures in line graphs, just to give you assurance that our projections are reasonably close to what our actuals are. You can see in this graph that our anticipated consumption is a little bit lower than it was projected, but with that also our expenditures were also lower. And a lot of it has to do with weather-related. If we buy less gas and people use less gas, our commodity costs are lower, and so are our revenues. Another pie graph that just gives you a depiction of how important it is with reference to gas purchases. We have a $40 million budget, and $25 million of that is buying that commodity. Just another comparison between Southwest Gas, in this case, and City of Mesa. And you can see that based on average residential consumption, that we really enjoy, our customers enjoy a lower rate today than Southwest Gas. And as Frank was alluding to, there is volatility in the marketplace, and we don't always try to hang our hat with the idea that we'll always have a lower average billing with reference to Southwest Gas, but we work very hard on that to try to make sure we're always competitive. Trends and issues. Obviously, reliability is a huge issue for us, and to that, we have what we call two gate stations that supply gas to our systems, and we're going to add a third gate station located near Rittenhouse and Power to ensure that we have reliability to our customers. The Magma area is fast growing, but it's also costly because of the geographic spread that it gives us for our crews. And to that end, we do have an alternate rate that we've submitted and presented to the subcommittee, the Audit and Finance Committee, and that we were also submitting to the Transportation Infrastructure Committee right after this study session. We do have a franchise fee election that we need to put on the ballot in 2008 for Southwest Gas. And to that end, I wanted to advise the council that we have open discussions with Southwest Gas with reference to discussing purchase of service areas, swaps, things of that nature. They're in our planning area in the southeast portion, and we're in Magma. And we'd like to discuss some possibilities of land swaps or area purchases, and we continue to do that. In summary, I couldn't possibly present gas without letting you know, plus knocking on wood, that they've been accident-free for around 6 months, and we're very proud of that. It's a very, personally, risky business with reference to the commodity that you're working with, and our folks out there in the field are doing just a terrific job. We do see growth, even though it's not as high a rate as it was in 2005 or 2006, and it's mostly in the Magma area. As we talked about the volatility of the natural gas market and how it's influenced through crude oil and in the world market. So we'll have to keep a vigilant look at that to be sure that we're getting the best price for our customers. And it's a very regulated business, and we need to continue to work with reference to keeping up with regulations, being sure that when there's legislation being submitted either at the federal level or at the state, that we're part of that, and to make sure that it affects us in positive ways. The next program is water, and again, it's just the same summary. It begins with ending fund balances. We have we show you the budget projections for end of year. As you can see, the ending fund balance grows somewhat between this year and next. We have two budget requests in the water division. One is two utility specialists that work with reference to making emergency calls, especially gas emergency calls, and they also replace water meters and gas meters. It's very important because the ones they replace, in many cases, are zero reads, producing no revenues for us. So it's important that we have a minimum staffing to be able to do that. The other budget request was a two-person water valve and fire hydrant maintenance crew. Currently, we do not have a comprehensive valve maintenance program in this utility, and we have to have that. If we're not maintaining our valves and exercising them, then we're replacing them at 10 times the cost later on. And most importantly, we don't have the availability of the valve to work and close off sections if we have water line leaks and things of that nature. In addition to that, the fire department was supplementing some of this program by doing hydrant flushing, and this crew will relieve them from that duty so they can address some of their duties in the fire department. And we'll have more expert control over how we open and close those hydrants to minimize any water hammer, which is important to us. Our CIP reflects between this year and next very similar. Some of the major projects are the South CAP Reservoir and Pump Station that will ultimately turn into a South CAP Water Treatment Plant. We'll quickly talk about the Bella Vista Water Treatment Plant transmission line in the next slide, and of course we're doing our best to keep up with wells and reservoirs. The next slide is again a visual depiction. Again, we're doing well with expenditures, how we project them, and how they end up as actuals. What's important on the next slide in the pie chart, I think, is it's a $58 million budget. $7 million of that is water purchases. And as a note on other services, we have half of the $14 million going to the Bella Vista Water Plant, which we are part owners of. Trends and issues. We have a major transmission line that leaves the Bella Vista Water Plant that meanders through Mesa and ends up on 8th Street going west to service Phoenix and also Mesa. That will be offline approximately from October of this year till April of next year, and we'll have a alternate plan that we'll bring to council to make everyone feel comfortable that will be fine with reference to demand using water wells and off project water during this period. We do have a master plan that's being updated that we'll have a new model that'll be able to help model, especially in Southeast Mesa, with reference to collaborating with the HDR report on Southeast Mesa strategic plan, and we also collaborate with DMB with reference to the kind of things that they're talking about and the densities over in the GM proving grounds. The last note on this slide, and we'll be talking about it at the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, is a third-tier rate on our water schedule. In summary, our water resources portfolio, as Catherine tells me, is in great shape. Even with the study on Southeast Mason, our strategic plan, and DMB, we're confident the portfolio is still in good shape to be able to accommodate that. We have a lot of capital projects that have to be addressed, especially in Southeast Mesa. And We have a water system asset management study going on as we speak that will probably develop at least some tweaks, if not some major changes in our O&M and capital programs over the next 2 years.
Thank you. Jack, one of the concerns that we have, and Bill, I should probably be looking at you, is that Mesa has arguably the finest water staff in the entire valley. You're going to disagree with me, aren't you, Bill? But the problem is that there are so many of you who have been there for a very long time. What's happening in terms of getting new succession planning?
We're actually scrambling in that area because there is a huge demand for people that have the qualifications to step in. And right now, there, if you look at demographics across the nation, I think in all sectors, there's kind of a missing gap in there. The folks after my generation haven't been stepping up like the younger people in the, 20s to early 30s. So to give you an answer today, I really can't. It is a concern, and we don't have a ready answer. We are aware of it. We do have what I'd call some shining stars within the organization that can step up, but I don't think we're totally there yet.
And that was my next question, because I know that in Mesa Public Schools, what we did when we couldn't find things out there was we did a Grow Your Own program. So it sounds like you're doing some of that Grow Your Own.
We are, but we've got a ways to go. We're kind of short on the higher-end engineering type of positions that would step into the technical roles. The operator-type positions, the technicians, we're in very good shape there.
Okay. Well, Jack, you're going to have to help them with that.
I'll tell you, Vice Mayor, I've seen quite a few shining stars in the last 2 months, and it's a vigil that we have to stay on top of, and I think it's probably a nationwide issue, not just for water specialists either. Wastewater program, again, I think we're doing very well. We have a $60 million budget. We project $60 million in revenues and expenditures in $52 million. I think that we've got a long ways to go with reference to identifying our assets and developing solid operations and maintenance programs and capital programs. But for 08-09, I think we're in pretty good shape. The bars, we have one bar in this program. It's a lift station maintenance crew. It's two full-time FTEs. Currently, because of lack of staffing in the wastewater area, we have asked and had our water system supply personnel working on this lift station maintenance. They should be addressing water wells and reservoirs and pumps. And I'm sure that when we finish with our asset management plan for the wastewater system, we'll be addressing this and many other aspects of this system. In our CIP for wastewater, major projects will be rehab of many of our lines. We have a shared interest in the 91st Avenue wastewater treatment plant, and that's a very heavy burden that we share with other municipalities. We also have a plan for updating reclamation plants and also new wastewater lines. This is, again, another visual. I guess I can just summarize it to say that I think we're in good shape with reference to projected revenues and also expenses. A very large part of this $52 million operating budget is our capital end. It's very intense, especially with reference to some of our reclamation plants. The greenfield plant, I believe, was about $160-170 million just to build. Trends and issues. We do have a granite reef underground storage facility that we haven't been able to use since we've had flows on the Salt River. We expect to begin that recharge in June. We also have been started to send reclaimed water to the Gila River Indian Reservation through our Greenfield plant, and we've been able to exchange acre feet with reference to our effluent at the plant for CAP water. We expect that to increase eventually to about 30,000 acre feet reclamation effluent to the GRIC, and in exchange for about 24,000 acre feet of CAP water. As I mentioned before, we've just begun a wastewater asset management plan that I would expect that we would have a lot of issues surface, and probably some operations and maintenance and capital program changes in the near future. Wastewater summary, the reclaimed water is very, very expensive to develop, but as you know, in this desert environment, it's very critical and becomes a very large part of our water portfolio. In summary, for the Utilities Department, we have a reorganization going on. It's been going on for months and will continue, and its focus is to run the Utilities Department as four businesses. We have, and I haven't mentioned this to date, but you've had a presentation a few months ago about automated meter reading. We're in the midst of a pilot program right now, and we're taking a look at a lot of the advances in automated meter reading, and we should probably be back to council within the next few months with an implementation plan to start this. Again, our safety record is... I think is impeccable with reference to our systems. And Vice Mayor, you mentioned workforce retirements. That is on our radar, and we'll be working for internal, working on succession plans internally, and also looking at them externally too, which is always a good balance to get some new blood and also to promote from within. And with that, we're all here to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions? Daryl.
Excuse me, big picture question. You know, as I look at all these, if I compare our ending fund balance that's proposed for 08-09 in the various utilities to our beginning fund balance of 07-08, I'm just starting to go through and look at all those, but it seems like we're going up.
Mayor, Councilman Truitt, I think we'll be able to address those questions right in the next presentation, because we're going to show you why. One of the things we didn't mention about wastewater is we have, at the end of a five-year period, almost $30 million that we can't cover in debt service with the existing proposed rate. So when we go to these schedules, the next schedules you're going to see is going to show you that fund balances, why they're increasing for periods of time, and then when debt service payments come, then they start dropping off. So I think we can address at least the fund balance question here in the next presentation.
My next question is, why aren't we just transferring it into the budget and cut and not and doing less of these budget cuts that we're doing? So you're going to answer that.
We'll address both the transfer and the debt service payments.
Thanks.
And long-term view. Any other questions?
That's probably a perfect segue into asking Brian and Chuck to come up and talk about modeling of the four utilities and transfers. Thank you, Mayor. No.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Now let's turn to a little more philosophical discussion. We've had our practice in the past, we produce these long-range models or mid-range models, what we call these. Typically, we produce one in December with our mid and long-range forecast, and we kind of set our rates and philosophy of financial management are for the utilities for the coming years. There's been some discussions about some of the concerns about how individual utilities are managed. So I wanted to go over what our current philosophy was this morning on what we've been doing, how that's looked, and then come up with a couple scenarios for discussion purposes for going forward in the future and for use in the forecast in the future periods. You've got three packets in front of you, a current model summary, and this is all dealing after this fiscal year's rate adjustments. We're not talking about this year's rate suggestions. We're starting in 9-10 for this discussion purpose. We're staying constant with what was in the proposed budget. And you've got a, with each of these packages, and we're going to use the ELMO this morning because it's a little difficult to show anything on the screen, but put up the summary there for this. We're going to have a summary page. Let me get it over here. It's going to be a little difficult, I can see. But you've got this in front of you. And just to go over what we've done in the past, each of these models have been based on a targeted transfer from, and it gets to your discussion, Councilmember Truitt, that we have now targeted into the future. We used to, before 2006, 2007, in essence, sweep just about all of the fund balance from the enterprise funds to the general fund. With the adoption of the election in 2006, we came up with a new philosophy at the council's direction of where we now target what those balances are out into the future, those transfers are out into the future. So everything that operated with our big five utilities, water, wastewater, gas, electric, and solid waste, the net income from each of the results of those in a fiscal year contributed to that transfer. That was what we've been using to manage since that time. So just to go through what our model had in that is pretty much a 3% rate increase, which represented your continuing ongoing increase in costs like CPI. So every year our base increase rate suggestion was at 3%, try to keep our base costs up. So that's what we've been doing. We have tweaked since our December model to two little tweaks. Electric, we've gone to a more aggressive capital program, which is reflecting what the consultant revealed when he did a study of the electric utility. So we've got bonded debt service now in the program representing those additions. So that's a change from December. Another thing that we've done is we've now somewhat gone to a, due to the close relationship, but separate relationship of water and wastewater, we started taking them as a combined operating unit. And I'll explain that to you here in a moment. So those are the two major changes that we've done. So we've got water, it's now supporting wastewater to help stabilize its rate increases. And we're still going from targeted transfers, but I'll go through real quickly just to show you. If you go to page number one on your models, this is a summary of the whole program. And I'll try to point out on these columns what we're talking about. So we're talking about the period in 9-10, and I'm going to try to zoom in a little more. This line right here is transfers of as a percent of revenues. This is what we've been talking about, what we've been managing on our transfers to general fund. This is now set at what council policy has been directed. So we have not changed this in any of the scenarios that we've been talking about. So we're still using those targeted changes. One of the changes you will see out here is we have now started representing the transfers of water to wastewater, and the net difference is what gets transferred to the general fund. So the model now currently reflects that. If you want to see any of the individual utilities, and I'm open for any questions, the rest of the pages summarize that current philosophy. And you can look at the fund balances in the lower right-hand corner for what the targeted amounts were in any fiscal year and the end results. So this is kind of what we use as what we're end results are for all the changes that we've got to make sure we're still hitting targets.
And Mayor and Council, just I don't want to spend a lot of time on this scenario because we're going to give you two options beyond this. But if you'll just pay it, I think if you flip the pages through electric, water, gas, electric, wastewater. Just if you'll look at one, rate increases. These are the rate increases that have been planned in the forecast. We haven't changed those. This is kind of the as-is-today base scenario. And then the other line that I look at is the fund balance numbers at the bottom, where you can see we're trying to maintain a healthy fund balance throughout the period of time. We try to achieve at a minimum 10% of fund balance. Sometimes you'll see that we come very close to barely achieving that in some instances. Some instances that fund balance will actually be much higher, but you'll see it'll draw down. And I would draw your attention mostly to the line that's called debt service. You'll typically see that that's what we do is we build up reserves anticipating you know, a higher debt service in the out years and then have the funds available to manage that. While what we try to do is try to manage the smoothness of the rates so we don't have a lot of rate fluctuation from year to year. And so we kind of back that number into adjusting for fund balance and the debt service. So that's just to give you a comparative of the way the forecast is today. And as we go through the different scenarios, you'll probably want to look at the differences both in the rates and the change in the fund balances that you'll be seeing, as well as specifically for the electric utility, you'll want to pay attention to the difference that we're proposing to the council as it relates to the transfer.
And those are all very significant points, those are very good points. If you go to scenario one, get into the changes of what we're proposing. One of the primary changes is to the electric utility. We have now, in essence, treated it as a self-contained utility. So we have now encapsulated what's going on with that electric.
Can I just say thank you? I really appreciate that.
We've worked very hard to accomplish this.
And I know it was a lot of work, and I really appreciate it. For those people who don't understand, the situation is entirely different in that it doesn't cover the entire city of Mesa. It covers about 6.5 square miles. So thank you for doing that.
Yes. I'll tell you how we've accomplished it. We've lowered their transfer amounts. We are now using a targeted transfer amount that stabilizes at $2.5 million per year by 12-13. So that has changed their contribution to the overall pretty significantly. So if you look at the electric program, which is on page 2 of 6, what we've done is in the yellow line on that page is show you what the revenue difference is that change with 0% rate increases. So in this scenario, we're not giving any rate increases to electric utility. That is the difference generated to the overall program. What we did to stabilize the overall program was on the water side of it.
And before you go there, Chuck, just real quickly, Council, let me show you the difference of what this means in this formula. We're now, Chuck used the word targeted. Actually, we're going to call it a fixed amount, a set amount for an electric utility. For example, if you look at the way we did it under the current, though it's been done for years and years and years, the percentage of the transfer was based upon a percentage of net income. Mm-hmm. It really had more to do with the end of the year results comparison of whether they were able to spend their funds or save their funds. It didn't matter. That could result in a higher percentage being transferred out. And you can see that on page 2 of 6 in scenario 1. In the 4 and the 07...
In 9, yes.
Where is it?
In 8-9, we were at 6. If we're planning $6,090,000 in transfer.
Right, sorry, thank you.
The next year, $4.5 million.
Right, so you can see... Well, I was going to show the 07-08 budget was $2.1 million. And at the end of the year, because we're anticipating some less than expenditures not being expended at the rate that we are budgeted for, that actually their transfer will actually increase because they will have a higher percentage of net income, which results in a higher transfer rate coming out. What we're going to do is change that formula after the 08-09 year. And you can see beginning in 09-10, there will not be a formula. It will be a set amount. The challenge back to the division managers is you now have for electric, you now have a known fixed amount from that year, and you can see it going down to $2.5 million out into the future. It's set. It's not regardless of the performance of the fund, that will be the set amount. And then they will be able to take the differences from budget expenditures to continue to grow either their fund balances or to use that to offset possibly the $32 million in potential debts, debt capital that we have out to the future. So it really allows us to isolate this as an enterprise with a known transfer amount that won't fluctuate. It's a set amount going forward. Whereas in the past, We would budget for a number, but at the end of the year, if they didn't spend all their funds, then that because they had a resulting higher net income, they contributed at a higher amount to the transfer. And they didn't necessarily realize that as a benefit back, it didn't stay back in the fund. It didn't stay in that enterprise to be reinvested in capital. So this is a different approach that we're going to keep constant in this scenario and the next scenario you're going
to
see.
Right. So the thing to point out is that decreasing percent of transfers as net revenue, so that'll still be our measure, but you'll see that that continues to decrease, and fund balance is 14.2%. Now, the reason I want to kind of give you some precursor, we're not recommending this model, is because this model doesn't really show you the whole picture. We need to come back with the long range, because with electric, you continue to deteriorate a little too greatly with the operating costs, because with zero rate increases, you are not giving yourself any increase in the base costs that are associated with this utility. So just kind of give you the precursor there. But what we have also done in scenario one is the water rates, just to maintain that difference in revenue, if you want to go to page 3 of 6, is we had originally had it at 3% recommended rates. Well, that revenue amount that you saw lost on the electric side, we've now spread over to the water to keep ourselves whole in the combined utility fund, and the rates would be varying from 3.6, so it's an additional 0.6 to the original amount that we were proposing, to 3.9. So it varies in those years. And again, we're just maintaining those transfers from water and wastewater in a combined methodology. What we've also done to help reduce some of the long-range effect, go to page 4 of 6, we're now also recommending, because of the problem, if you'll see net income in 11-12, we start to actually lose money in this utility as a standalone in 11-12, and that continues out there through 14-15. Now, the reason this does occur is a direct relationship to the debt service to the expansion of facilities and plant. So we're recommending to increase from the 3% to help ramp up out into the future that 6.5% rate, just to address some of those needs on the individual utility side. Now let's go to scenario number 2. This is more our recommended. Because of the cost of electric, does include continue to increase, we're not going to go back to the 3% rate at this time. We're not recommending that. But we are recommending a 1.5% rate increase each year. That helps us, we hope, stay in line with what SRP is doing because of their planned increases, but also helps us meet that net income requirement and fund balance requirement that we'll need out in the future to help maintain the electric utility in a healthy state. We've also smoothed out the water rates in this scenario to just a even 3.4, rather than bouncing those rates from given year to given year. We're just recommending a 3.4% rate increase just to smooth it out to make up for that difference on the electric utility change.
Okay, Claudia.
Thank you. I know that I've been the most vocal person on this, so let me just state something else about this. My philosophy isn't that the rate can't increase. It's that we need to remain competitive with SRP, and people should not be paying, you know, it's one thing if it's $1 a month. It's quite another thing if they're paying $10 or $15 a month more than SRP customers. This 1.5% may not be enough, because you may see inflationary increases in your cost for your employees that are going to be greater than that. So I don't want you to just think in terms of a flat 1.5%. I want to maintain that thought process. Even I hope somebody's going to pick this up, and Alex, you're the only one sitting here, and well, these two guys to my right, but they've heard me say it before, but I mean, of the incoming people, I hope they're going to pick this up and not just look at that in terms of that 1.5%. That might not be enough. So I appreciate what you're trying to do, but I don't want to
just set that as the only benchmark.
And here's probably the second half of that shoe, because I need to get to the fund balance issue. This now gives us, if we get a philosophical direction to go on this, now we can start financially managing from the fund balance perspective. Because, yes, you do see fund balances start to grow, but there's two parts to this. There's the rate increases on your base cost, which I think should be addressed on an annual basis, to go to your question. But we also have a debt management situation. We should be looking at when the fund balance is healthy enough in any given utility and maintain those targeted transfers, we start paying pay-as-you-go on capital projects, and you manage your fund balance from that position. But it also has, we've got that bigger picture with future debt service needs that we ought to be looking at that whole picture to make sure that we're not giving rate shock in any given year to utility customers, but that we're managing it from the long range rather than just that year-to-year basis.
Okay. Any questions? What direction are you looking for today?
Yeah, Mayor, I think what we just want to make sure the council understands is the way we're going to look at this utilities going forward will be under the really looking at scenario two going forward. Obviously, this doesn't affect the rates that are before you that we're asking you to adopt for this fiscal year, but it is a strategy of the business modeling that we're going to use looking forward out into the future. Ultimately, we have to look beyond even 14-15 as a result of debt service that comes out into the future. But for planning purposes, which is important to us, because especially as we structure capital improvement programs, as we look at the relationship between the utility and the general fund, these are become an important part of the building blocks that we use to kind of look out into the long term. We're not asking anybody to adopt rates today. But unless there's a significant or uncomfortable position of what we're trying to assume here, this becomes part of our assumption as we build the blocks for the future budgets is really what it is.
The only assumption you're also making is the electric will be remain fairly flat as far as customers and
right.
percentages. So
yes, correct.
If you do have a light rail comes downtown, you have an urbanization, you have more demand use, that could change too.
Okay, absolutely. And one of the other things that will have a significant impact that I should point also is Jack presented in his presentation, we're doing asset management evaluations. Well, if whatever those needs are identified, we're going to have to get into the CIP program. Those are also long-term needs.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Planning division budget issues.
Morning, Mayor and Council. Here this morning to visit with you about the planning division budget and what we're looking at for some modifications for the coming fiscal year. As I start the presentation, I wanted to give a quick reminder of the role that the planning division plays in the organization and the professional and technical services we provide to the development community, to citizens, to other staff to help develop a livable and sustainable community. Back in February, I was before the council along with Terry Williams from Building Safety talking about the Development Services Department and some of the trends we were seeing in caseloads in both the Building Safety and Planning Division. I want to start this morning with an update on some of those trends we're seeing. What the next few slides will show is that submittal activity is slowing. Their overall caseload is still high, but it's starting to slow somewhat also. Case sizes are somewhat smaller, and revenues are declining. Start with a look at pre-submittal activity. We did not have this slide in the previous presentation, but looking at this, we can see in 07-08 that the average monthly number of pre-submittals we're seeing is down. It means just one or two per week less, but we are seeing a slight decrease. The other thing to note from this slide is that the size of the cases, many more of them are smaller case sizes than what we've seen in the past. Then just a quick graph also to show how that lays out per month and the fluctuations we see over time in the pre-submittal applications. There's really not that much variance per month, but you see the new line for 0708 typically is on the lower side of the scale there. Previously, we presented to you the level of first submittal for Planning and Zoning Board applications. We think these are important because with pre-submittals, a lot of things come in. We talk about them, and they don't come back. But once they make a formal application for Planning and Zoning Board, they're a pretty serious case and just about always move forward. And it also gives some indication what other activity we might see with the Design Review Board and some things that would go on to Board of Adjustment. So in this chart, again, you can see that while the current fiscal year is going to be less than last year, which was quite a record year, it's pretty consistent and even still kind of high from what we've seen the last couple of years. Another thing that we measure is the amount of overall activity we have that go to all of our boards. This is looking at the Planning and Zoning Board, the Planning Hearing Officer, the Design Review Board, Zoning Administrator, and the Board of Adjustment, and looking at those agendas and the amount of items on each of their agendas. And you can see this current fiscal year has been very high. We've had a lot of applications working through the process. Each of the boards has been up a little bit. Board of Adjustment in particular has been about double what they have seen in previous years. It's added a lot to this caseload. Another thing that we are looking at here, again, is the total number of items on their agendas. So when we have items that get continued, they end up on an agenda several times. Again, it's additional work for staff to process those continuances and keep them on the boards. And things that get sent back maybe from council to P&Z, again, hit those boards. So we see things multiple times that also add to some of those numbers and don't really generate any additional revenues for the number of times we look at those items. This just quickly shows by month the caseload. The top line in orange here on the screen is the current year. You can see where it has been higher, but is now trending down more similar to what previous caseloads have been. So from here, we'll transition into looking at our revenues and expenditures and on into the budget. This particular table, you can see across the bottom, the percent cost recovery, last three fiscal years range from 29 to 43%. We saw, particularly in 06, 07, a significant increase in applications and the fees that we were getting from that was well above what had been projected in the budget. The expenditures have also remained flat initially and have gone up the last couple of years. So you can see beginning of this fiscal year, we had projected 29% cost recovery. Right now, it looks like it's going to be more like 26% cost recovery. So that's starting to go down from where we have been before. Again, we think that's somewhat related to the number and the size of applications.
John, we had a conversation about percentage of cost recovery at the Audit and Finance Committee. Has that conversation been taken back to the Development Advisory Forum?
Yes, Vice Mayor, we did, and I'll get to that a little bit here when I get on into the fee increase proposals, but we did meet with them last week and got some feedback from them.
Thank you.
This does look at indirect and direct costs to the program. So when we started this year beginning to look at the budget back in January for the coming fiscal year, we looked at the projected revenues and the expenditures that had been anticipated at that point. We were seeing 21% cost recovery for the coming year. And that was not considered to be acceptable where we needed to be from a budget standpoint with all the city's other needs. And so we needed to look for some adjustments to the Planning Division budget to bring that more in line. Discussion?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Councilmember Truitt.
Just in general, we see that our budget jumped significantly from 06-07 to 07-08 on the expenditure side. Why was that, since I wasn't around for that?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Truitt, I believe that the two major things that would have impacted that would be the zoning code update contract and that the consulting services for that, and then in this year's budget, we also got a portion of the Southeast Mesa Strategic Development Plan budgeted in our area, added some of those expenditures. on our side. Chuck's got a clearer picture of that.
And there was one other item, is that they had the market survey adjustment on salaries, which was a boost to the salary based on whatever their classifications were.
Do you have to tell how much those studies were in the budget?
And the only reason I don't know...
Let's get that back to the council.
Yes, we can get that.
I mean, we went from 3.2 million in 05-06, and now we're almost, well, not quite double that, up to 5.4 million, and then we're proposing 5.3 million in 08-09. So, somewhere I guess we're going to talk about that and why that is.
Well, we can get back to you with on all the details of the breakdown. I don't have all that breakdown for you today, but I think John's going to explain how we've addressed his budget issues with that cost recovery formula.
I think, Councilman, the question is, inside the 5.3, first of all, the 5.3 is what was in a forecasted number. We realize that number doesn't work, so that number is actually going to be reduced. Because that 21% cost recovery, that's unacceptable. So we have to deal with the percentage cost recovery and reducing that number. But what I think we need to get back in, I wish we had a number today, is included in the planning department budget is cost related to the HDR study down in Southeast Mesa, as well as the consultants for the new
zoning code update.
I suspect those are fairly significant numbers. And I don't want to venture what that is. I know the HDR study by itself is over $800,000, but it's split between transportation and planning and some other areas.
But that study was in 07-08. Does it still impact 08-09?
I don't know. No, it was not in the 08-09 number. That's why we're reducing that 5.3 as being, that's where he's reviewing the reductions to that number.
And their impact from that cost of service study was somewhere in the neighborhood of $340,000 to $350,000 in other services. One of my staff was quick on the drop.
And a quick amount on the HDR and the zoning code update to planning was someplace in the area of $450,000.
Was that this year?
That would have started in the 07-08. Questions?
Okay.
So as we then began working on this year's budget and the need to make adjustments to the expenditure amount and discussions with the city manager, we would like to establish and maintain a cost recovery in the division between 30% and 40%. We'd like to work more towards consistent 40% over time as we can, and set for the coming fiscal year a recovery of at least 30%. That resulted in a need for a budget adjustment of $1.128 million from that original forecast amount.
Tom has a question.
Yes. John, I'm sorry. I'm going to follow up on Daryl's question because I think I understand why it went up from 06 to 07, particularly by the two consultants, $450,000 for the zoning code update, maybe $350,000 for your share of the Southeast study. But those are 07-08 numbers. I would have expected that number to have then dropped by that same amount for 08-09. So what did we have built in to the two-year budget that we adopted last year that included an 08-09 starting number of 5.3 million?
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, I'll have to get back with you on some of those more details about what were in those expenditures, some of which I think
I understand you're addressing it. And
you're
proposing to cut 1.1 million from it. But I think Daryl raises a good point, is that if those were one-time consultant expenses in 07-08, it should have been dropped substantially lower, not gone up in 08-09.
We'll have hit a few of those things here in that couple of slides that were in there.
Okay,
that
thanks. I think that articulates the question, doesn't it?
So to achieve that adjustment, we are looking at reducing our other services and commodities funding by $320,000 and our personnel services funding by $808,000, which is 11 FTEs and two part-times. Did want to note that does not include the four positions funded by building safety that have previously been reduced in the planning division area. In terms of the other services and commodities, that $320,000, there are some Tidemark upgrades that were in there that were projected that have been added, put in this next year's budget that we're taking out, GIS system upgrades, some of our record retention, document imaging project, and EMS contracts that we'll be reducing. We have some contract positions, three part-time contract positions, that we will eliminate, some temporary services, and then some other miscellaneous items to get to that $320,000 reduction.
John, can you pull that microphone any closer?
How's that? Is that better?
Even a little
more?
Or else talk louder.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, that sounds better. In terms of the personnel reductions, the $880,000, and that's 11 full-time and two part-time positions. We have one current vacancy that's included in that list. And we have five current planning positions, two GIS and one contract position GIS, two long range and two contract positions in long range, one plans review position, and then one in admin and two part-time in admin to get to that total. You have before you also, as part of the packet that we handed out, it's not part of the slides, current and revised organizational structure information. If we look at those quickly, the one that has a lot of boxes on it, the January 2008, that's where we started this year in terms of our organizational structure. Draw your attention primarily to the upper right-hand corner. We have an inspections and plan review area that is currently in operation, does the zoning review of construction documents and the zoning inspections out in the field, as well as a few other things. And then in the lower left corner, you see the current planning area with the design review board, planning zoning board, and so forth, staff. As part of the reduction in personnel in each of these areas, neither one was really large enough anymore to be a standalone section within the division. So when you look at the revised organizational structure on the next sheet, you'll see that those two have been combined in the lower left-hand corner into a current planning and development review services area. We don't have all the boxes on this. The first one showed individual positions. This one we haven't gotten quite that defined yet, but we're combining those two areas. And you'll see in the lower left-hand portion, we are organizing our staff instead of being functionally organized by discipline, plan and zoning board, design review, et cetera, into some development review teams. And those teams will be organized with primary geographic areas. Each team will contain 2 to 3 staff members plus a senior planner to oversee the work that they do and assist in the processes. And those teams then will be expected to process from beginning pre-submittal stage all the way through plan review all the activity that comes into their area. So we can provide a much more project-oriented approach to the projects that come into the planning division. And we think that will address some of the needs we've been hearing from the development community as we've talked with them about what they would like to see. We hope that for most cases we can get to the point where they'll have one person in the planning division that they will work with all the way through the process, so there's not a lot of handoffs. One person becomes familiar with their case, what they're trying to accomplish, what decisions and agreements have been made, and can carry that all the way through through the program. We catch up on my slides here. So this is a model that we've looked at in a couple other places. Scottsdale in particular uses a similar model to this. Would note that they have three areas that they divide their staff into to do this same type of work. Each of their areas has 7 staff members that carry the similar type of caseload through. We'll have 3 or 4 per area, but we think we can make it work, or we'll sure work to do that. The senior planners will continue to provide oversight in terms of the primary function also of their board that they have, and provide input and resources to each of the sub-teams for specialized services. Also on this slide, wanted to note that as we reduce the staff, we've currently had a very high caseload we've been carrying to the boards. Typically, as we've studied the work done by the planners, they can, on a fairly regular basis, manage 10 cases at a time. They're someplace in the process. New ones, one's going to P&Z board, others coming on to council. New ones come in each month, ones fall off the other end. They can hit its peaks of, you know, 12 to 15 are manageable without burning them out too quickly. if in reducing the number of staff we're talking about, if we see the same number of caseload, we could start to see some problems in processing that many cases in the same kind of time frames. After we went through the process of looking then at the organizational structure and reductions in our operations and staff to meet the goal of at least 30% cost recovery, we also took a look at our planning division fees and where they compare to other cities in the valley and how we might be able to make adjustments in those fees to also address the overall cost recovery for the division. And so we've provided for you, and you do have on your agenda for Monday night consideration of some fee increases. I want to run through quickly what some of those key things were. Zoning applications, the chart on this page shows a comparison of where we are currently and then what the impacts of the proposed recommended fee would be to some typical type size cases and how those compare to other cities in terms of zoning applications. That amounts to around a 20% increase in each of the components of that overall fee structure. We're proposing a similar increase to the combined zoning and site plan fees and those that are site plan only fees. They're a little bit harder to compare to other cities because the way they address their fee structure is not as easy to compare. We're proposing a similar increase there. Design review board, our current fee, almost a little over $1,200, proposing to increase that to $1,800. That will still be well below the average from other cities that have design review processes. A few other the proposed changes, pre-submittal process, it's currently a very low fee of $162. We're proposing to increase that to $400. We have a number of staff that are involved at that stage from different areas of the city to give applicants early feedback on their applications and what fatal flaws there may be. A lot of staff time is spent there. This is still way away from any type of cost recovery, but we thought it would be good to move a little bit more in that direction, but still keep it affordable because it is early in the process for people who may not go forward. Council use permits, currently we have one fee for a council use permit. It doesn't matter if it's a council use permit that's associated with some other rezoning application or a standalone one such as for a Hurricane Bay type or a pawn shop that's just a standalone application. When it's that standalone council use permit application, a lot of times we spend a lot of staff time addressing the issue. And so we're proposing to break that out into two categories and create a standalone council use permit fee and charge that to a similar to the zoning base fee, make that a $2,500 fee, but then reducing the fee when it's a council use permit request that's attached to a some other zoning application and reduce that to $1,000. Some minor changes to the Board of Adjustment fees. No changes proposed to the platting fees because we find those are very consistent, maybe a little bit high compared to some of the other cities. When we take all the proposed fees together and look at the estimated activity for the coming year, we're projecting these fee increases would result in an additional $191,000 in revenue for the coming fiscal year. With those additional fees, staff would propose that we use those to retain three of the positions we would otherwise lose due to the previous discussed staff reductions. If we do that, it will allow us to maintain full staffing, what we would consider to be full minimum staffing for the development review team. So we can have the three planners plus the senior for each team instead of some of them just having two. It also provides staff to in the long range area to facilitate and help process the minor plan amendments that go with those. And then also staff in the GIS area, or the GIS area that does our addressing and is preparing for the 2010 census to keep that processing of new addresses up to date and keep the overall addressing in line for the census coming up.
Tom? Thank you. John, I just want to make sure that I understand it. With the fee increases, you're proposing that the 11 full-time and two part-time positions that you're reduced on an earlier slide gets reduced to 8 full-time and 2 part-time.
That's correct.
Okay, so those three are, the increased revenue is going to result in you not having to cut as many positions.
That's correct.
Okay, just want to make sure we were correct.
And so then, thank you. For that, then bottom line, as we're looking at this, with the reductions, with the fee increase, retaining those three positions, we believe we would be coming in around 31% cost recovery overall, which meets the target or exceeds the target of 30% we established at the beginning. So in summary, we are seeing our workload dropping slightly. We've established a cost recovery level for the program that we are planning to use this year and we'll use in the future years in helping to set our budget and proposed fees. We're adjusting our process, our organizational structure, to be more project-oriented in the way we process applications. And again, the proposed fee increase is on your agenda for next Monday.
Tom? And I'm assuming then, Chris, that the final budget proposal will await what happens on Monday night on the 21st?
Oh, as far as the...
whether they cut the 11 positions or whether they cut 8 positions is dependent upon what happens Monday night.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
We haven't seen that rolled out yet.
From which action Monday
I'm not
night?
Sure.
Well, there's the fee increases are on the agenda for Monday night.
Correct.
Those don't pass, then I'm assuming the budget rollout will include the 11 positions, or number already been put together?
Well, what we did is, you remember our conversation from the audit and fees committee?
I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Based on
that was a long day, if you recall.
It was. What we did, we didn't include any fee increases to that point. Based on the Audit and Finance Committee's recommendations that day, we went ahead and included these fees for the preliminary budget.
Okay.
The final budget can be adjusted to reflect
But to your
decision.
Point, Councilman, those positions, we will begin now working with those employees through the RIF process.
You know you have at least 8, just depending upon what happens Monday night, you may have 11.
Correct.
Positions. And that's what I was just trying to make sure that the budget was rolling out consistent with what
it will fit.
There's an alternative here. There's a A or B that's being offered.
Yes. Mayor, council members, we have already identified all those positions. We've already talked to all the people in those positions, all 11 positions, so they're aware that of what's going on.
Okay. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. In terms of the development advisory forum.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You want to tell me about that now?
Yes, Mayor, Vice Mayor, we did go to the Developers Advisory Forum last Thursday. We talked to them primarily about the proposed fee increases, but did also talk about it in terms of the percentage of cost recovery that we're looking at. They I think had a good understanding of the concept behind the fee recovery and the need for that. They focused mostly on the fee increase at this time, and express some concerns about a fee increase at this time with the economy in the way that it is and the challenges they're facing. And we may well have some people here Monday night to talk about that.
And Mayor and Council, I think the philosophy, two parts. One, I think we need to set our rates, fees, at some targeted amount of cost recovery. And this is one of those where the market, as far as comparative fees, really only gets us to about a 30% recovery. I mean, we could go higher as a percentage of cost recovery, but then our fees and charges would be much higher than our peer cities in the valley. So there's kind of a balancing act that we're trying to achieve here, trying to maintain an average of what the fees are in the area. And I think I'm concerned that I appreciate the concern from the development community about fees, but we're asking for, I think, on the average of what others are paying for, and that allows us to maintain just that 30% cost recovery for the resources needed to conduct the planning. The other concern I have is, as many of you know, we're in significant conversations with some very large developments that most likely, as we've been working through the PCDs, and I think we will see a lot of that activity coming forward next year. My concern is, though, how do you staff up for what might be a sustained level of high activity, but it may not be for, I shouldn't use the word sustained, it could be for a period of time, but it may not necessarily be something that would last for 5 years, 10 years. I don't know. And so the concern is, how do we address kind of those large demands that may come in a one period of time, over a period of time. One of the things we are going to explore, though, is the opportunity for developments such as that, and they've offered, is the possibility, and this has been done in other communities, is how do we pay for essentially a resource in addition to what we have now, to be able to deal with the very large developments that may come and consume a lot of time, is they would maybe pay maybe another fee that directly essentially is associated with adding staff that would be targeted for that period of time. Now, I would say staff, I think one thing we have to look at is that staff, a full-time staff, or is it contractual staff? And so those are things that we're going to have to bring back to council, because while this shows a decline to a certain level, we're spending a lot of time talking to some development that could be very significant, that could change all this. And the fear we have, frankly, the biggest issue we have is losing that institutional knowledge walking out the door with these cuts. And so it's kind of this balance of resources and but when we need to be able to respond, having the resources to do. Because we all hear the concern and complaints about the difficulty in getting through the development process. And so it's that balancing act that we're trying to achieve here with modest rate increases, reduction in workforce, but having the flexibility to adjust in the future.
My concerns are a couple of things. First of all, people who are currently in the pipeline, they don't get impacted. They're in the pipeline as long as, I mean, when we've done, you know, when somebody's out there and they have designed a project and they have built their cost model and everything and they're in our process, we have really tried to make sure that we address them as a matter of fairness. So I want to make sure that that's happening with this.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, I think this addresses at least part of that concern. While we're bringing these to you now, these fee increases, if approved, would not start till July 1. So we would have plenty of time to make people aware of those fees and get applications in if that's a concern to them.
Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is, I raised this at the Audit and Finance Committee meeting, but that 500-acre fee, I'm still having a hard time with the fact that we're so much below other Valley cities. There aren't that many, I don't know that we have that many 500-acre things come in, and your answer, I believe, was that it's such a considerable jump that you didn't want to jump it too much. But my flip side of that is you aren't going to have that many that come in, so if you pass that by, you didn't recover the cost off of that. So that's a concern I continue to have. So I just want to share that with other people who are here. I think we're going to have that philosophical discussion has to be part of this. You know, where does the next council want to go in terms of that recovery? Because that I think should be one of the biggest underlying factors. I understand that people who are in the home building industry right now are in a world of hurt, but the problem isn't being caused because of the fees that are being charged at cities. That isn't the underlying problem with the home building industry right now. So I'm struggling with that, wanting to be sensitive to the underlying philosophy, which I really think should be the conversation that we're talking about. Thanks, Mayor.
Mr. Druid.
I want to just make sure I understand well. Back on page 14, you talked about lowering the maximum caseload that can be processed to the boards. I assume you're meaning cumulatively per the department, not necessarily per person.
That's correct. At some level, if we cut the staff this much and keep that same level of caseload coming in, it would be difficult really to process that in the same kind of time frames.
Unless you had contract employees that they paid for directly through some other structure or whatever. And I think I have similarly the same concerns, and I think I did when we talked about this previously at the committee, is that are we raising these fees enough? And we're comparing it to the average of other cities, and I think we would be, you know, that's a static comparison. I got to believe that every other council is having the same discussions and talking about raising that average up in all of their cities. So we're comparing it. It's kind of like that fire discussion we had the other day. We're always comparing it to something that's a moving target. And my recommendation is that the recommendation should be higher.
Scott? Alex?
Just a question with under new council use permit standalone, you have $2,500. Is that still the 31% cost recovery roughly, or was there, you had it as a standalone, so it doesn't really relate to cost recovery?
On that particular item, it would be difficult to say specifically what that item by itself would be in terms of a cost recovery number. It helps add to the overall Planning and Zoning Board application cost recovery and maintaining that level.
Yeah. Well, as an observation, if I could, Mayor, it would seem that those, having had experienced those at a P&Z level, those generate, they were really labor intensive. All the calls, I would think it would be more appropriate to get a little more aggressive towards more full cost recovery, to, especially in that one area just stands out to me, as it seems like. So, and I do agree with the Vice Mayor. I think there's probably some opportunity I would look forward to. Initially, I don't want anybody to misinterpret as I make observations and things. I've made up my mind, but I think there should be some more discussion towards aggressively looking at cost recovery. I think that's a good way to go. And I know in the past I've shared some ideas on billable hours for professional services, which I think goes to the city manager. These big, unique projects that come in, they pay for architecture, engineering. They're used to paying professional fees. And is there a way to apply that appropriately for these planning type of professions, professional services? So I hope there's more discussion along those lines.
Tom? I think we discussed the hourly basis on the big projects that we have and decided that they have a right to fire their own architects and stuff, but they don't have a right to fire ours. Just on the sort of the flip side, or just sort of a counterweight to the argument about the cost recovery, it's a good thing, but also remember that all of these requirements, from design review to the zoning to the standards, everything is put in place to benefit the community as a whole. So the community benefits as a whole from this, and so I don't want us to get into the idea that the people who develop projects ought to pay for the entire cost of this, because if they're not the only ones who are benefiting. For those of us who don't really like zoning codes at all, I mean, it would be much faster and much cheaper to do these in my world, but my world isn't going to prevail. But again, the model that's been developed is one that includes sort of an intrinsic value to the community, and that is not something that you can cost recovery.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Acknowledging receipts of various boards and committees is number 7. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
8 is conferences and meetings. Anybody want to update here this morning? All right. Number 9 is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe this evening at 6:30 in District 6, we have a kickoff of a Building Stronger Neighborhoods initiative, so we're looking forward to that. And then we have a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting, following this meeting, and we have our council study session council meeting on 21st, this coming Monday. Please look into your notice of time. I think there's an item that we're going to try to do before the council meeting. They're still considering, so we may be having an earlier start. So if you'll just look at that this weekend. Thank you.
Scott?
I am pleased to inform you that my daughter will be receiving an academic award. Unfortunately, it's going to be Monday at 6 o'clock, so I'm not going to make the council meeting on Monday.
All right. Item number 10 is items from citizens present. Were there any requests to speak? Okay, then the study session is adjourned, but I do need to convene a special council meeting for the purposes of convening an executive session. Do I have a motion to enter into that? Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? We are in executive session. Topic is Cooper versus Mesa.